And I'm speaking to Teresa Hill, the CEO of the National Osteoporosis Foundation of South Africa, also known as NOFSA. Now, we know that osteoporosis is a lifestyle disease and prevention is the best cure, and also that no state funding is provided for the vital preventative work required. Now, we are going to be talking about osteoporosis, and firstly I'd like to say hi and good afternoon to Teresa. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Oh, thanks for having me, Sister Zina.
It's wonderful to speak to you again. I think I have spoken to you in the past, not very sure when, but I think we did.
Yes, we did.
Now, let's talk a little about the foundation before we go on to osteoporosis itself. Tell me more about the foundation.
You know, we've been around for about 22, 23 years. We were established in 1993, and we're a dual organization in the sense that we provide training and education to both doctors. And you know, it's very difficult to try and educate doctors. So we do have a training course for them once a year. And then our main function is to provide information to patients and to families of patients with osteoporosis, because osteoporosis is an immensely neglected disease worldwide, but especially in a country like South Africa where AIDS and malnutrition and TB takes the forefront, and osteoporosis is just way down there. So the other main function that we have is to lobby with government and with the medical aids, and that's it's a tedious job to do, but we need to do that just to make them, or try and make them more aware about osteoporosis, because all those diseases that they're really punting, all of them can cause osteoporosis in the long run, either the medication or the disease itself. So the foundation is mainly here to educate everyone and to lobby for the patient's rights.
Indeed. The foundation, therefore, certainly will depend on the generosity of support from the private as well as the corporate sectors to offer this kind of education and support. And as we all know, prevention is always better than cure.
Yes, absolutely. And as with most lifestyle diseases, I think lifestyle is just the most important and cheapest way to prevent a disease which can become extremely expensive once you have fractures and that you need to treat it actively.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, we want to talk a little about the various factors that contribute to the risk of developing osteoporosis. Perhaps you can share that with us. But before we go on to that, maybe just for the benefit of our listeners, because many a times we confuse osteoporosis and arthritis. Can you just clear that up for us a little?
I think you're absolutely right, because many times we get with phone calls at the foundation and I have to stop the lady or the man in the middle of their story, because I can hear that they're talking about osteoarthritis. It's osteoporosis that we're talking about, and that literally means porous bones. So once your bones become thin and porous, it makes it more susceptible to fractures. Osteoarthritis attacks the joints. So the one attacks the bone itself. Osteoporosis and osteoarthritis attacks all the joints. So knee pains and hip pains and shoulder pains, that is osteoarthritis.
And I think why people are so confused is that many a times you suffer from both.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
So, we do tend to become a bit confused whether this is now osteoporosis or osteoarthritis. But anyway, now that it's cleared up, I hope our listeners will now, be able to identify the two. Anyways, we were talking about the various factors that contribute to the risk of developing osteoporosis. And I think you did mention something about bones. So please, let's carry on with that.
There are so many factors that can contribute to developing osteoporosis, and I'm going to list a few of them. If you've already had a fracture after any minor injury, that is having a fracture or a bone break, falling from a standing height, not jumping from the roof of your house, but just falling from a standing height, then you probably have osteoporosis. Most hormonal diseases, like an overactive thyroid or overactive adrenal glands, any malabsorption disease where you don't absorb any of your food stuff, malignancies, cancer causes osteoporosis in the long run. It's the cancer itself and the chemotherapy or the other stuff. And then a very important thing that's very important or very, that really is close to my heart is eating disorders, especially in our teenagers. And it's not only girls that get these eating disorders, but boys get it too. So they cut out everything that's good for them, for their bones, and they can develop osteoporosis. If you're on regular cortisone use, and many people have to be on cortisone either for rheumatoid arthritis or for a lung disease, I'm not saying that you should stop using that, but you must just be aware that those drugs can cause you to lose calcium in the urine and cause osteoporosis. And the other important thing is age is still one of the biggest risk factors for developing osteoporosis. Osteoporosis is not a normal part of aging, but because we become older, we get more and more diseases, of which osteoporosis is one. If you're a woman and you've had the menopause before the age of 45, that's a risk factor. Men think they don't go through a menopause. I think some of them are born in the menopause. But they also have reasons for having low sexual hormones. Their testosterone levels can become low for some other reason. If you use anti-epileptic medication, that really suppresses the vitamin D level, so you can develop osteoporosis. And if you're tiny boned, if you weigh below 55 kilos, you can develop osteoporosis because you basically start off with less bone than me with my much bigger bones. And if in older people, and this is becoming a very interesting field for research, is falling. People fall, old people fall and they break their bones. And the more you fall, the more the chances are that you're going to break your hip. So if you've had more than 3 falls during the past year, you must also know that you can break a bone. And then obviously exercise is important, calcium is important, don't smoke. In the Western Cape, we do have a high use of alcohol in certain groups of people. So alcohol abuse is bad for bones. So vitamin D, very important. We go out with sun blocks on our skins. We don't make vitamin D in the skin. Really, for religious purposes, people are covered when they go outside. The women are covered. If you sit in your office the whole day from 9 to 5, you don't see the sun. If you live in Cape Town, you don't see the sun in winter. So there are many risk factors for having low vitamin D levels. And we know that vitamin D is very important for the absorption of calcium. So if you don't have vitamin D, it doesn't matter that you're taking enough calcium. You can't absorb the calcium. So now I've given you 10 mouthfuls of risk factors.
Yeah, no. What about people suffering from, you know, various kinds of diseases? Does that also, can that also develop into osteoporosis?
You know, not the disease itself. As I mentioned, hormonal diseases like an overactive thyroid or a malignancy like a cancer or eating disorders, those diseases can definitely lead to osteoporosis, either by way of the disease itself or by the treatment of the disease. Because we know cancer can cause a low bone mass, but we also know that the chemotherapy that's given for many cancers like breast cancer is also a culprit in making your bone density go low.
Mm-hmm. Is it true that women are more affected by osteoporosis than men?
Yes, it is still true, but I think that gap is becoming closer and closer, because one in three women will develop the disease. And remember, in this country, all race groups are prone to developing osteoporosis. And the other thing is, it's one in five men. So it's not that far apart. One in three women, one in five men will develop osteoporosis after the age of 60. Because we're a developing country, men and women in this country over the age of 60 fracture their hips at the same rate. So there's no distinction then. So, and we know that men have many other, what we call comorbid diseases. They do have other diseases like heart disease and just a variety of other diseases when they get older, because they're naughtier than us women, I think. But that also, because then if they fracture a hip, they tend to die more often than women do, just because of all those other diseases. The scary thing about a hip fracture is that 50% of people will die within that first year after having had a hip fracture. Not because of the osteoporosis, but because of the complications of either having to be in bed after your operation, complications due to the operation, because it's old people that fracture their hips. So that's the scary thing, that more than 50% of the rest will never be independent again. So if you can prevent that, and it's so easy to prevent that, we have to.
Yes, that's what I want to know. You can prevent it, but how can one prevent osteoporosis?
Very easily. You must just listen to what your mother told you when you were young. You've got to eat all your veggies and drink your milk. So diet, very important. A diet rich in calcium is important. And we say that you have that three dairy portions, that gets you to your daily requirement of calcium. 1,000 milligrams of calcium a day is considered sufficient for your bones. But then you also need vitamin D, and we say about 400 to 800 international units of vitamin D if you take that as a supplement. Otherwise, you need to spend about 20 to 30 minutes every day with bare arms in the sun. And there needs to be sun. It can't be cloud cover. Otherwise, you block out the UV rays that make the vitamin D. If you drink, don't drink more than 2 glasses of whatever you're drinking. And that's just a general comment I'm making about alcohol. Smoking, stop smoking, because smoking suppresses the sex hormones in both men and women. So it's not sexy to smoke. So those sex hormones are your bone protective hormones. Exercise, very, very, very important, because it's the only physiological way where we can stimulate bone formation, all those bone forming cells. So if you do weight bearing exercise, and walking is still considered the best exercise, and it's not marathon running, and then you also need a core strengthening exercises. So muscle strengthening exercise is good, weight bearing exercises is important to stimulate those bones.
So you can't get away from this. Nutrition, exercise plays a very important role, and of course the vitamin D.
Absolutely.
Now, just one thing with regards to calcium. We are always advised to have especially women, are advised to have their calcium in some way or the other. How much of calcium supplement can we take?
You know, what we obviously recommend is that you try and get your calcium in your diet. If you don't drink dairy or eat dairy or have a bad diet, obviously you need to supplement. But we don't recommend more than one supplement a day, so that your total intake still remains about 1,000 milligrams of calcium. Because we do get calcium in our diets even if we don't eat dairy. But you probably need one supplement a day if you don't get to your three dairy portions, or if you're a vegan or just a vegetarian, you need about 2 kilograms of broccoli per day to get you to your 1,000. So you do need one supplement. And what people need to remember is that many of the supplements out there are calcium carbonate supplements. You don't find calcium free in nature. It's always bound to a salt. So calcium carbonate, it's almost like eating chalk that you write on a board with. But calcium carbonate supplements need to be taken with a meal because it needs stomach acid to split the calcium from that carbonate salt. So it's better to have your calcium supplement at with your evening meal.
Mm-hmm.
Many doctors prescribe it before you go to bed. Patients wake up bloated and constipated because there's nothing, the calcium just lies in that stomach. So very important how you take your calcium.
Okay. Yes, this was something that was concerning, you know, when to take your calcium supplement. In any case, we're going to take a very short break. When we return, we continue talking about osteoporosis. A reminder to our listeners, if perhaps you have any questions, please feel free to contact us. The number to dial is 011-854-1548. We also have an SMS or WhatsApp number, 082-8492-786. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a few moments. We're talking about osteoporosis, and just a reminder to our listeners that our lines are open if perhaps you have any questions or concern. And my guest today is Teresa Hu. She's the CEO of the National Osteoporosis Foundation of South Africa, also known as NOSA, and she's talking to us from Cape Town, alhamdulillah. Now, what we want to talk to you about now is osteoporosis diagnosis. Now, apparently to find out, if you have osteoporosis, there are several tests which can be done to measure bone densities, and these would include the DXA scan and QCT, a blood test, bone density. But Teresa, I do understand that you have experience, or rather, you are experienced as a DXA operator for more than 15 years in various drug trials, including osteoporosis studies. Perhaps you can explain to us what exactly this DXA scan is all about, and also some of the latest findings.
Okay, well, the DXA basically is just a nice name for the bone density. It stands for dual energy X-ray absorptiometry. So basically, it's a painless, almost X-ray-like examination that is done to determine what your bone density is in the lower lumbar vertebra and also in the hip, because those are two different types of bone. So we measure the bone density of those two areas. What we need to remember is that many fractures, osteoporotic fractures, occur when the bones are not yet osteoporotic on those scans. So if you've already had a fall after minor trauma and broken a hip or a forearm, you probably don't even need a DXA scan. You have osteoporosis. So the interpretation of the DXA, I can make a few comments, because to go into real detail about what is osteoporosis on the scan is probably can be a little bit confusing. What I need to say is many DXA operators or radiologists or radiographers, when they see your scan, they make a comment like, "Ooh, you've got the bones of an 80-year-old when you're only 30 or 40.
Mm-hmm.
It's nonsense. They cannot make a comment like that. What the DXA do with us, it compares your bones to age and sex match normals and see whether it's normal for that, and we call that the Z score. And then it also measures your bone density to where you were supposed to have had a peak bone density, there where your bones were at their densest, and it's usually between the age of 25 and 30. And then we can compare it to that bone density to see how much bone you've lost according to your age, whether it's normal or not. So it's a nice tool to have. You can't see that you have osteoporosis by doing an X-ray only. because you must have lost about 40 or 50% of bone before it's seen on an x-ray, and the converse is also true. Sometimes you see bad bones and then it's normal on a bone density. Why do we need a bone density? If we decide to put you on treatment, we need to follow up. After 18 months to 2 years, we do another bone density. Needs to be done on the same machine to see whether your therapy is working. And many patients will ask and tell you, oh, my therapy is not working because my bone density stayed the same. The whole aim of any therapy for osteoporosis is to maintain the bone that you have and to make it stronger so that it doesn't break easily. Because if you catch the osteoporosis early enough, you can prevent up to 70% of future fractures.
Okay. Anyway, is there a cure for osteoporosis?
No, there's not a cure. If you're 60 years old and you've got risk factors for osteoporosis, you're never going to have the bone density of a 25-year-old again.
Mm-hmm.
But what we can do is to make your remaining bone strong, and with most medications out there, we can even push it up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But patients also need to remember that every response to any therapy is an individual thing, because you and your neighbor both go to the same doctor. Both of you have osteoporosis, but she had a 12% increase in bone density and you only had 2%. And that's when the aunties start telling each other, well, they're on a better medication, even if they're only on the same medication. So responses to any therapy is an individual thing. And they mustn't start comparing their DEXA scans with each other, because there are many things that influence the results.
Okay. Now, on your website, osteoporosis.org.za, there's a risk assessment that can be taken. Well, I think I should suggest our listeners to actually go out and try this assessment, as it gives you an indication whether you might be at risk or not, and also whether you should visit a medical practitioner or not. Would you like to comment on that quickly?
Oh, yes. It's basically those risk factors that I mentioned to you earlier. There's just a score linked to each of those risk factors. So there are three categories. If you actually have one or more in category A or B, you know that you are at risk of developing osteoporosis. What I need to say is, like anything in life, you can have all these risk factors and not develop osteoporosis, or you can have none of them and still develop osteoporosis. Risk factors are just guidelines for you to know that you must go and have your bones checked out if you have many of these risk factors. And if you have normal bones, after you've had your risk factors checked out, and then you're safe. But this is a guideline for most people, just to make sure that they do follow a healthy lifestyle. And and I know you've seen our theme for World Osteoporosis Day, that was on the 20th of October. It's basically love your bones. And remember that this thing, this skeleton you have, you only have one body to live in, so you have to look after it. So it's like doing maintenance on your house. I always tell our patients, do your maintenance with your body too. You need to do that every day. Healthy lifestyle, exercise, diet.
Okay, and just finally, I know, just with regards to your foundation, what do you do to accomplish your mission for the foundation?
Oh, you know, our vision is obviously to have pills and diagnostic tools available to everyone. We know that that's a very difficult task, so we need to do that. But we educate, we do fundraising, we have training courses, we have social media. Our awareness has gone the social media route because it's much cheaper for us. We don't have the money to do TV ads because it just costs too much money. But up. We're on Twitter, and we're on email, and we're on Facebook, and we've got Pinterest. We're on Pinterest. So if you want to go and want to know anything more about osteoporosis, go and have a look at our website. And the other thing is we've got a dedicated helpline for patients who need urgent information about osteoporosis. And even if you're looking for a doctor in your area, we act as a referral center.
Okay, and your contact details? Will it all be on the website?
It will be on the website, and our website is www.osteoporosis.org.za. And our helpline is 086110265.
Sorry, can you just repeat that?
086110265.
06110265.
That's correct.
Well, thank you so much for speaking to us today, Teresa. We certainly do appreciate it. And yes, I'm sure that you've shared a lot of information with us once again.
It's such a pleasure. You can speak to me again next year, because I think I spoke to you last year.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Susanna.
Okay, you too. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Well, listeners, that was Teresa Howe, the CEO of the National Osteoporosis Foundation of South Africa, also known as NOFSA. And if you want more information, really do go and visit the website. It's www.osteoporosis.org.za, and you can also contact the helpline 086110265.